WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. The other day, I read a Washington Post article headlined, U.S. Troops Rely on Foreign Parts. Apparently, American high-tech military equipment uses foreign-made semiconductor chips, transistors, video display terminals, and other electronic parts. And when these parts needed to be replaced during the war, the Bush administration had to pull strings in foreign countries to rush orders through. Well, when I read this, I thought of Robert Reich. I thought this was the kind of example he'd use to illustrate his favorite subject, the new global economy. It's not just our high-tech weapons that rely on parts from Germany, Japan, and other countries. It's our cars and our TVs. Some of our magazines, newspapers, record companies, film studios are owned by foreign companies. Reich talks about this in his new book, The Work of Nations, Preparing Ourselves for 21st Century Capitalism. And in this, the second part of our interview, Reich points out how America's economic thinking has not yet caught up with the realities of the new global economy.
We used to equate the competitiveness of the United States with the competitiveness of American business. As long as American corporations were profitable, as long as they maintained or increased their world market shares, we thought that America was competitive. But actually, these days, American corporations are becoming global, and so that their profitability and world market share may or may not have anything to do with our standard of living as Americans. In fact, your chance of buying an American-made car these days are greater if you buy a Honda than if you buy a Pontiac Le Mans. Who's us? Who's them? We are the American workforce. We are Americans who are engaged in making things and building things in America, regardless of whether we're working for the Japanese, whether we're working for the Germans, whether we're working for an American company. The question is, what value are we adding as Americans to the world economy? And there I get concerned, because the top 20% is adding ever more value, but the bottom 80% of Americans are adding less and less value, and therefore their salaries, wages, and benefits continue to decline. That's the problem of American competitiveness.
Let me ask you a totally hypothetical question. If you could control the economy, which of course you can't, would you try to make our economy no longer be a global economy, no longer be an economy where everything that's manufactured has part of it coming from Japan and part of it from Germany and part of it from America? You know, this great like interconnection between the economies of the world.
Well, partly, I mean, the answer is I wouldn't try to go back to autarky. I wouldn't try to build walls around this nation. We benefit from interdependency. By the way, we couldn't do it even if we wanted to. Governments are terribly ill-equipped to keep out anything weighing less than 300 pounds and anything less than the size of a car. I mean, look at dangerous drugs, for example. You can't keep it out even if you want to keep them out.
You teach at a university, at Harvard University. You've looked at how corporations have been changing. What about the university? How is that changing? And what about the university's economic base?
Well, universities are becoming global as fast as companies. About a third of my students at Harvard are non-Americans. Indeed, if you look at all of the PhDs awarded last year, take a field like engineering. If you look at the engineering doctorates awarded last year in the United States, more than half of them were awarded to non-Americans, most of whom are going to go back to their home countries. Now, a lot of people worry about this. They say, well, why shouldn't we be awarding engineering doctorates to Americans? The real question we ought to be asking ourselves is, why aren't there more Americans who are interested in getting or are qualified to get an engineering doctorate? Many of my best students at Harvard University over the past 10 years, they have not gone into engineering. They've not gone into marketing or sales or inventing or building things. Many of my best students, particularly the undergraduates, they have gone to Wall Street as fast as their little legs can carry them. And now that Wall Street is hiring fewer and fewer of them, the next great growth area where many of my students want to go is law, particularly bankruptcy law. It seems to be that's the new growth area of the 1990s. A lot of money can be had. Well, that is part of our problem in a sense. We have many, many too many resources, many too many of our best brains going into the professions that divide up the pie rather than the professions that bake a bigger pie.
Do you try to give social responsibility type of lectures to
your
students?
Oh, I tell my students, don't do it, don't go to Wall Street, don't go into law. But the market is telling them something. Many of them, you know, you have these huge salaries available to students. A couple of years ago, I called up, I traced down my 10 best students from previous years. I was curious. I just wanted to know where they were, what they were doing. I found most of them on Wall Street. I called them up, asked them how they were doing. I was amazed at two things. Number one, how much money they were making. And number two, how eager they were to tell me how much money they were making. Well, the market is dictating, supply and demand is dictating where our best minds in this country are going. And look at the other end of the spectrum. You see that one out of every five 18-year-olds is functionally illiterate. One out of every four doesn't even finish high school. So the best and the brightest are going into the rearranging asset fields, and yet many of our minds are being wasted, literally being wasted. People who could be highly productive in the future are being consigned to second-class economic citizenship.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Robert Reich, and he's an economist at Harvard University and the author of the new book, The Work of Nations, Preparing Ourselves for 21st Century Capitalism. We'll talk more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Harvard economist Robert Reich is my guest, author of the new book, The Work of Nations. Well, let's give you the chance to change the world for a couple of minutes here. In the light of a global economy, what kind of rethinking do you think our political leadership needs to undergo?
One thing that depresses me, Terry, is that the Republicans tend to think only in terms of laissez-faire cosmopolitanism. That is, they don't think government has any role to play at all. They want government to get out. They want to reduce taxes. They don't understand that we have not been investing nearly as much as other countries have proportionally in education, training, preschool care, in roads and bridges, all the things that will make us more productive in the future. But the Democrats have been much too interested in protectionism. They want to erect walls around America. They want to protect the status quo. They want to protect American jobs. They don't understand that the world economy is not a, as mathematicians would point out, a zero-sum game in which we gain only because they lose. The world economy can be a positive-sum game in which everybody gains to the extent that everybody becomes more productive. Instead of protectionism, the Democrats ought to be talking much more about investment in people, investment in our kids, investment in the future. They have not been.
And by investment in our kids and in our future, you mean better school systems?
I mean better schools.
Better infrastructure, roads.
And preschool, daycare, postnatal, prenatal, all of the things that will produce a better workforce in the future. When I talk about education, a lot of people throw up their hands. They say, but we've been spending a fortune on education. Not true. In the wealthy suburbs, yes, we've been spending a lot. When you consider university education, yes, we've been spending a lot. But K through 12, for most Americans living in central cities, living in poor rural areas, no. We are lagging way behind what other countries are spending per pupil. And also, if you look at even what we pay teachers, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but American public school teachers these days are earning only 4% more than they earned in 1970. But in 1970, a lot of talented women did not have alternatives like they do today. If you're a talented woman today, you don't have to settle for a teaching profession. You can make much more money doing something else. If we want talented women or men to go into teaching, we're going to have to pay them more. Germany, and the former West Germany, pays a 35-year-old teacher the equivalent of $53,000 a year.
Well, that's really interesting.
Much more than we pay.
Yeah.
Much more high-status profession in Japan as well. We don't, and therefore we're not getting the talent in the classrooms.
Let's look at some of the recommendations you make in your book. You recommend a more progressive tax system, and by that I assume you mean greater taxes, shifting the tax burden more to the wealthy than on the middle class.
Well, here's something else, Terry. That many people, when I say that, particularly people in the top 20% start screaming at me, and I understand nobody wants to pay more taxes. But if we had a tax system that was as progressive as we had even as late as 1978, And by the way, in 1978, no one was screaming that the tax system was too progressive. If our income tax was as progressive as it was in 1978, last year, the top 10% of Americans would have paid $95 billion more in income taxes than they actually paid. Now, that $95 billion could have gone a long way with regard to rebuilding America, schools, infrastructure, doing a lot of things we need to do.
So during the Reagan and Bush administrations, the tax structure has changed a lot.
The tax structure has changed a lot, not only federal taxes, but what's happened is that a lot of Americans are paying huge amounts now in Social Security taxes. Those are very regressive in the sense that the poor pay a higher proportion of their incomes. The rich, once you hit $53,000, you don't pay any more Social Security tax. Sales taxes, state sales taxes have gone up. That also is a regressive tax. Lotteries. A lot of states use lotteries. You cannot come up with a more regressive system of raising money than state lotteries. Who is it that buys lottery tickets? Mostly the poor, the working class. They think they're going to strike it rich. They hope to strike it rich, but actually they don't realize that they are financing a big piece of the public revenue, a big piece of public activity through their lottery tickets. That, again, is a very regressive tax. Add that all up together, we have had an amazingly regressive shift in the tax code over the past 15 years.
You also recommend limiting entitlements to those who need them. So I imagine you mean there that the wealthy wouldn't get, for instance, a Medicaid when they retired or wouldn't benefit as much from the Social Security system?
The wealthy get Medicare.
What's
happened in America, here again, a lot of people don't realize it because these things have happened incrementally. America's children are now much worse off than they were about 15 years ago. America's elderly are much better off. The wealthy elderly are taking much more out of Social Security than they ever put in. They think of Social Security as their own savings, but actually, in inflation-adjusted terms, wealthy Americans are pulling out of Social Security about three times what they put into Social Security. I'm not running for office, so I can say something that's absolutely blasphemous, and that is if we taxed Social Security payments, and if we also took the cap off of off of the income that's subjected to Social Security among working Americans, that would yield an additional $650 billion over the next 10 years. Put that together with what we get from a more progressive income tax, and you almost have, and I'm not even talking about national defense yet, we almost have $2 trillion to rebuild America.
I think it would be very, very difficult even for people who agreed with you to agree that it would be politically possible to make a change like that.
I'm going to get so much hate mail from this broadcast from elderly people who say, don't touch my Social Security. But again, people have to understand that Social Security is a pay-as-you-go system and that a lot of wealthy elderly are pulling out much more than they ever put in. Now, national defense is another area where we could save. If you reduce national defense expenditures by 15% a year, not very much, again, we'd have about $400 or $500 billion over the next 10 years to rebuild America. It's not that we can't get the money. We can get the money. We just haven't focused on the nature of the problem.
Well, the Bush administration is cutting back on defense, at least it plans to, in spite of the war in the Gulf. Do you support that? Do you support their plan for doing that?
Yes, we need to cut back on defense. But perhaps we ought to cut back on a little faster rate than we are cutting back already. We will still have a lot of money left over to wage wars in regional areas like the Middle East to protect the peace if we want to be the world's peacekeepers. But George Bush talks about a new world order. At present rates, what's going to happen is that we will maintain that new world order. We'll be the mercenaries for the rest of the world, but we will also be relatively poor. The people in the former West Germany already have a higher standard of living than the average Americans. Other people around the world, particularly the Germans and the Japanese, will live better than we do in this new world order, even though we will be keeping the peace. Well, that's not very attractive. And that I don't think it should be very attractive to many Americans.
Robert Reich, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, Terry.
Robert Reich is a Harvard economist and author of the new book, The Work of Nations, Preparing Ourselves for 21st Century Capitalism. It's just been published by Knopf. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.